Testicles 1-2. Testicles 1-2.
It is your girl, Whitney, a.k.a. a young black queen. We're back with the What's Really Good podcast.
And it's your girl, Megan, a.k.a. a strong black queen. And welcome to episode 3.
Welcome back.
So, what's really good, Whitney?
What is really good? So, my girl Megan is official in the city. Litty in the city. My girl Megan has moved to the city. She has started a new job, a new career, doing her thing up here in the city. And I'm so very proud of her. That's my what's really good or what you know good, rather. And Megan, if you want to tell us a little bit more about your job, that would be kind of cool.
Yes, yes, yes. I finally taken my talents and to the big A, and I'm just, you know, working at a law firm, doing this, that, and the third to keep it brief, but I do enjoy my job. I'm so blessed to be given the opportunity. Everything kind of fell in place, so I'm just giving a big shout out to the man upstairs, and thank you, Sissy.
Yeah, shout out to G.O.D., because he... always on time.
Always.
Megan, what you know good?
What do I know good? So, my good sister Whitney, drum roll please, is taking her talents to another state. Can you guess what state it is?
Can you guess? All my exes live in
Texas. So that's what I know good. My sister has, you know how you have a goal in mind and you set out to accomplish it? Well, that's her goal. She's wanted to move on to bigger and better things. Yes. And what better place than Houston, Atlanta, Vegas?
Houston, Atlanta, Vegas. I'm branching out, y'all. It's been my dream to get out of the city for a good little minute, and I'm doing it. Like, y'all wish me luck, you know, the West Really Good fam, the good people. Send all your prayers up. I'm going out to Texas, and I'm about to take my talents out there and do my thiz na you.
Yes, 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 sister. So proud of her for living her dreams, being unapologetic and being fearless. That's what is needed in today's society, to go after what you love.
Exactly.
You got one life, so.
Live it to the fullest and live your best in this one. No, that's right. But we're going to move right along and get into our this or that. So the first this or that we have today is from me. So me and Megan were talking about this a while ago, and basically the this or that is macaroni and cheese a soul food? Like, you have it with greens, fried chicken, etc., whatever you consider your soul food, or is macaroni and cheese an all-purpose food, meaning you eat it with everything, like barbecue, hot wings, a sandwich, baby shower food with your meatballs and your chicken salad? Is macaroni and cheese an all-purpose food, or is it strictly a soul food? Megan, what is your opinion?
You know how I feel. Mac and cheese is one of my favorite dishes, and I would like to eat it at a barbecue. I would like to eat it at a fish fry. I would like to eat it for Sunday dinner. So to me, I'm going to be probably biased. I can do mac and cheese with any occasion, any side.
Okay, well, I must disagree. I am on the opposing end. I think that macaroni and cheese is a soul food, because ever since I was little, macaroni and cheese has always been eaten in my family with soul food. We eat it with our greens. We eat it on Thanksgiving, and I consider Thanksgiving food a soul food meal. We eat it on Sunday dinners, and those are definitely soul food meals, because my auntie put her foot in all the meals. So for me, macaroni and cheese is a soul food. I want it with my fried chicken. I want it with my collard greens, my neck bones. That's how I feel, you know? When I see people having macaroni and cheese at the barbecue, I'm just like, what does this go with? Like, the baked beans, the hamburgers. Like, I'm confused. But that's just me. We've always, in my family, eaten macaroni and cheese with our typical, what I consider typical soul food. And, you know, for some people that might be different. But, hey, that's just how I feel about it. So, I'm with macaroni and cheese as a soul food.
Alrighty. So, we're going to get into our topic for today. We're going to switch things up a little bit and talk about a more serious topic that I don't think we talk about enough. Like, it's not. Everybody,
especially with our families in the Black household, we don't talk about our topic enough.
So the topic is Black trauma. We wanted to drop the Black, but it's needed. So it's Black necessary. Trauma. So there are different forms of Black trauma, and I have made a list of certain things that probably traumatize children, and mine starts with whoopings. Spare the rod, spoil the child, as they do in the Black community. And in some cases, it's needed. In some cases, it's levels to it. You know, yeah. Some kids report getting hit with extension cords, hangers, shoes, anything the parent can find, you know, at that moment is a real reality to some, including myself. You know, it has gotten so real so many times, and it's like, my mom, there's no manual on how to be a parent. You know, people do what they learned, and, you know, the cycle continues. So in the Black community, we don't really face some of our cycles that we should address. So my number one was like whoopings. Sometimes they take a psychological toll. Sometimes they're not done properly and it becomes abusive. Sometimes it instills fear instead of respect. So Whitney, what do you think about Black trauma? What is something on your docket?
Well, I wanted to talk about what you said first, the whoopings, and go into how far you guys think it's too far. Because when I was little, I remember very vividly getting whoopings, and I mean, I've never thought anything of it. I mean, of course, then at the time, you know, you cry and you move on with your day or whatever. But like, as an adult and being in the social media age and like seeing people talk about how they're currently not, they have kids, people who are my age have kids, and how they don't give their kids spankings, or just even people saying, like people my age saying how they have basically maybe PTSD from being whooped. And it's crazy because I don't have that same reaction. Like, I sometimes, because I've worked with kids or whatever, I sometimes be like, you know, y'all parents might should have, you know, gave y'all a spanking or whatever. And I actually appreciate my mom for those whoopings. And just like Megan said, I done had some whoopings with some, I done tore off my own switch. I done maybe had some extension cords, whatever was next to my mama or my grandma or, you know, my nana or whatever. Whatever was close to them, if I was doing something I ain't had no business doing, I was getting beat with. So my question is, I think it's okay to be, you know, whooped, spanked, but I think especially in this day and age, there's a certain level you can go to that might be too far. And kids now are very different than how we were. Megan, what's your opinion on how far is too far?
Well, because my mom took, I think too far is too daggone far. Like, we know. And it's just kind of hard to, like, you know, bring it up, because that's literally what I've dealt with, and you became immune to it. Like, I don't know. I was still bad. I didn't drop out, didn't get pregnant. In high school, I was, you know.
So you don't think whoopings had anything to do, like, with how your outcome of how you are as an adult? Do you think?
Yeah, I think they help.
Okay, like that's what I was just saying, because a lot of people say, you know, oh, I'm not gonna whoop my kids because that's traumatic. But you know, you look at people like us, and no, we're not perfect, of course, but in a sense, we feel like without those whoopings, I don't know this for a fact, but maybe I would have been out here wilding, or I wouldn't have gotten the point across. Now, am I saying that you have to whoop your child for them to turn out, you know, good, or turn out and be a great person? Definitely not. But I'm saying, I think
that depending on your child,
they help build character.
Yes, you have to do things that help your child. You have an overactive child, and they need certain, reminders to not do this or that. You know, you have to do what you have to do to ensure that they, have some type of structure. I was wild as hell. So I get why I needed some of those weapons. I was fast. It was just not fast. I just had a slick mouth. So my mom was always popping me in the mouth. I was always, getting them quick hits when I don't even know I'm about to get hit. Because I'm just doing too much talking. So it's just like, in some cases, that was traumatic. Some of the whoopers I endured. And it's just like, at the end of the day, I do know how to act. Right. I know what I ain't going to do, what I am going to do. I have respect for people. I have manners. I have a lot of things that I needed to learn character. To help to build my character.
And I think essentially that's what a whooping. I think our parents wanted from that. I don't want to think that they were just beating us just for fun. No, they were beating us to build character. And clearly, we've turned out. I think they did pretty good.
They did great with us. Look at us. We are two young Black African American, same thing, women who are fighting for what they love. We don't have any children. Not that's a bad thing, but it still gives us time to make life better for our future children. I appreciate. The whoopings, even though it did traumatize me in a way, but it did not like lasting traumatic. It's just like somebody reached their arm at me, I might flinch.
Okay, so speaking of trauma and trauma that comes from like your family, how do you feel about trauma that's passed down from your family? So we can go into like generational curses and whatnot, but I brought up the question or posed the question, like, I know our family passes down different traits, and sometimes they pass down good traits, like a Sunday dinner every Sunday might be a trait that you pass down, but also a lot of times in the Black household, the Black family, trauma is passed down. So like anger and negativity about certain subjects and certain things that are talked about. And I know we were talking about this with our friends the other day about like the conversation about sex. So how in some Black households sex is like it's a sin and it's just not talked about, it's like shunned. So and that can be a Black trauma in a way, right? So I kind of wanted to talk about like in your family, and then, I'll talk on mine, like, some of the things that are passed down, and if more trauma is passed down, then good traits.
Currently, in my family, I believe that men coddling has been passed down. I have two brothers, and I am the only girl, and I am the alpha girl, and they are the
alpha girl,
the baby boys, like want to stay in your mama house forever. Like my brother is independent now, but I think he learned his independence from me, like just by our conversations and how we move and how I in certain ways lead our sibling tribe, because I have a little brother. And
so you feel like the older sibling.
I feel like the older sibling because of how my brother was raised and how things were, okay for him. Things were, this and that for him, and it wasn't like that for me. I had a watchful eye, as you know. Me and her, we've been friends our whole lives, just about. And my mom used to blow my best friend's phone up when I turned my phone off.
Karima will blow me up. I'm talking about call after call after call. And I want to answer. Y'all.
Whitney always wanted to answer.
Don't you answer that phone. I'm like, wait, no.
Like, come on now.
Because Kitty calling, I'm talking about first ring. I'm answering. So
it was just the fact that it's like certain things, Black families, I guess because our Black men have so many statistics and so many things going on with them, so they are raised at least right, halfway right, that's what we do to them to protect them because we don't know any other way. So that's something that I've known that's been passed down that I see, in my life. What about you, Widow?
So one of the things that I wanted to talk about, well, with my family, it's basically the, I don't know what it's called. Is it called like the in the nest or I forget what the term is called, but basically like my grandma, it might be piggybacking off what you said. My grandma coddled like my aunts and my mom and my uncle and didn't want them to leave the nest. Empty nest syndrome. That's like, didn't want them to leave the nest. Didn't want them to go very far from home. And so my mom always told me like, I don't want it to be like that for you. I want you to go off and live your best life, because I feel like, you know, my mom kind of held us back. She always, you know, there was an incident in my family where my mom's oldest brother, he actually died or whatever. And my grandma had let him go, you know, go off to high school in a different city, which is, you know, Albany or whatever, where we're from, but they lived somewhere else. And so, and he ended up dying. It was natural causes or whatever. But after that, my grandma was really like, she kept them a tight grip on all her kids after that. And so my mom always said like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna let you go live your best life. But then I became an adult and ready to live my best life. And I could see like my aunt and my uncle and even my mom wanting to keep me near. They always want me close. And I get it, because I'm really one of the only child. My grandparents on my mom's side only have two grandchildren, me and my cousins. So I get them wanting to keep me close. But I feel like that is a way of like hindering. And older people do this. I don't know if you have people in your family that do this too, Megan, but like they have a way of like, why do you need to go off and do that? Why can't you do that here? You, whatever you're going off. And when I say off, it could be you going 3 hours, you know, moving 3 hours away. Like when I moved from Tuskegee to Atlanta, which was 2.5 hours after I went to college, they were like, oh, what you gotta go to Atlanta for? It's always, I feel like the older generation is always like, they always feel a little, I don't even know what the word is for it, but they I don't want to say they hinder you, but they always feel a way when you're leaving a comfortable place or leaving a comfort zone. Like they want to just keep you close. And for what reason, I don't know, but that's one of the things in my family that I feel like has been passed down. It was from, and I think honestly it even goes further than my grandparents, because just hearing stories of my grandmother's relationship with her parents and her actually, my grandma being the only one of her siblings that stayed home and like went to school, you know, because that was back in the day where you either worked, you went and worked on a farm or worked in somebody's house or whatever the case would be. My grandma was the only child that stayed at home and actually went to school, and they sent her to college. So her parents, she wasn't the baby, but she was the youngest girl and they coddled her. So it's like they coddled her and then she coddled her kids. And then now it's like my parents, you know, tried to coddle me. But, you know, I feel like us being millennials, it's harder for our parents, even if you have parents like that, it's harder for them to do, because we're just a get up and go. Like, we're like, you know what? Like, just me, like, I was like, I literally legitimately want to go to Texas. So I'm about to do it, you know, and I feel like that's the type of that's how we are. And it brings me to the point of like how we react to things versus our parents' generation. Like this generation, millennials, Gen Xers, who are the ones right up under us, interesting characters. But I think that's right, the Gen Xers, yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure the Gen Xers are right up under us. Correct me if I'm wrong, I'll Google that later. But that brought me to a point of how we react. How do you think you react, Megan, versus how your parents react to just different situations and stuff that's happening like in your life?
I tend to react to certain things with the open mind.
Or do you and your, you know, parents react the same?
Well, no, not at all. Me and my mom are both the same, in which we feel like what we're saying is right. So it's just both of us literally, sometimes our phone calls end with a dial tone. because it gets so intense. So it's just like sometimes we react the same, and most times we react indifferent. But I believe because of how I react and how I explain it to her, she understands why I react that way in a different sense. Like, I have to break down so many things to her, explain so many things, because that was not done previous mm-hmm. times. But again, there is no rule book. There is no handbook to being a parent. So all our parents are trying to do is the best they're doing. Mm-hmm. So us, thank God, right. are here to open up their minds mm-hmm. and to break generational curses, to break mm-hmm. trauma that's being passed down because we don't know anything else. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, is something that I am consistently working on.
Mm-hmm. And it goes back to us keeping an open mind, because, like, how I feel like I react versus how my parents react, I always have an open mind. Like, it doesn't matter what the situation is. It could be something with my friends, something in a relationship, or something I'm dealing with my family. But I always keep an open mind. And I remember, like, once my aunt was just like, you know, you are just, you know, you just think so freely about things. And I'm just like, well, how else would you think? Like, I don't want to go into a situation with having myself closed off. Like, I want to go in thinking that all doors are open. Now, if a door closes, that's fine. If this door closes, that's fine. But I want to, like, dive into a situation with an open mind and just, like, you know what? I'm going to be able to do this. And I think for a lot of the older generation, they were so used to, like, a lot of no's, and just so used to, like, doors just being closed to them, that they, even now that some of those same doors are, like, open wide, they don't see it, and they can't, like, they don't understand that, you know, it's okay to be optimistic. That's the word I'm looking for. It's okay to be optimistic about something that, you know, maybe 20 years ago probably was, like, you know, something that wasn't possible then. But, like, now it's a different time, it's a different generation, and you can definitely still, you know, so you can do that, even though my mom a lot of times says I'm old, or, you know, I'm too old for that. And it's just like, I never want to have that mindset. And, you know, some people, you know, it's just a way of being stuck in a certain mindset. But that's one thing that I feel like I react differently from my parents' generation and, you know, the generation before them. Like, I go into situations with an open mind. Like, I'm never, even if in the back of my mind, like, I'm doubtful. And y'all, I'm saying all of this from, like, personal experience. I was literally having, I had a breakdown the other day, if I can be personal with y'all, because that's what we do. When this whole thing, me going to Texas or whatever, it was weighing on me, because I felt like the people, number one, the people in my life, my number one people in my life, which is, you know, my mom and my aunt or whatever, who are basically my support system and have been, you know, my whole life, I felt like they weren't supporting me. But I had a conversation with a couple of my friends, and they were like, Whitney, it's not that they're not supporting you. It's just they don't see it how you see it. You're going into it open mind, like, I'm going to do this. I have a plan, like, and you just see it that way. Like, you have a tunnel vision of what you see. All they see is that, you know, they love you and they want you close to them. They want you safe, and they, you know, they don't want you, and maybe not even that they want you close to them, but they just want what they think is what's best for you. And they can't see your vision. So it's not that they're not supporting you. Because it was weighing heavy on me. I was just like, dang, you know, y'all supposed to be my day ones for real, you know. And, you know, I felt like they weren't supporting me. But at the end of the day, looking back on it, and this revelation just came to me because of me talking about, you know, how I have an open mind to situations. It was just that they couldn't see it the way that I see it. They didn't see all the doors that were open. They just saw, like, one door, and it's like, you know, well, what if that closes? Then she's going to be disappointed, and, you know, it's going to feel like not only did she fail herself, or we failed her too, but it's like, no, that's not how I look at stuff. I for sure mm-hmm. look at it like, you know what? One door closed, the next one is going to open.
Exactly.
That door closed, I'm finna go break down the next door. Like,
exactly.
And that's my mentality, and that's a way that I feel that differs from my parents. They are just like, you know what? Oh, door closed. You know what? Maybe next time, but not for me. No, that's not how I see it. And then... I also, what I had to talk about with the topic of the day is the financial instability. That was another thing that a lot of people, you know, talk about, in especially in Black families, how that could be passed down. And it happens, and I feel like for me, financial stability is a big thing, because you need, like, I feel like what falls under financial stability is like credit, and that's something that I feel like is not, you know how we learn certain stuff in Black homes like at an early age? Like, I feel like that's one thing that should be taught, that that's not taught to us, or that isn't brought up enough. It's not talked about enough. Like, you might hear, like, your uncle's co-signing on somebody's, co-signing for your auntie for something, but, like, you don't know why at, like, a young age. And then you become an adult, and you're, like, you realize, like, I need my credit to do everything. Mm-hmm. And it's just not a conversation that's been had, like, as well as, like, saving. And, you know, I'm not saying this happens in all Black homes, but a lot of situations it does. And it's probably not just, you know, Black homes. It's probably a lot of other, you know, ethnicities too. But I know I can only speak from, you know, the Black experience or whatever, as, you know, how being financially stable isn't really something that's, like, honed in a lot of Black homes. And that can also be something that goes along with the generational curse. But I know that's something for me, like, once I get my credit right, I definitely want to bring awareness and bring a light to when I have kids. And, you know, even before I have kids, you know, younger generation, my friends' kids, or, you know, my younger cousins or whatever, I want to let them know, like, start early. Like, start, you know, when you're young, if you're just going around mowing lawns for nickels and dimes, start saving that, invest in that, because that's another thing, investing, that we don't necessarily talk about a lot. And I definitely think that that's something that Black families should, because, you know, I feel like we could be a lot more wealth. The Black wealth could be built a lot more if that's something that started early in our homes. What do you think, Megan?
Yes, I do think that generational wealth is passed down, and unfortunately, sometimes it depends on that family. You know, my grandmother has three children. Two of them are well off. One of them is still struggling. And it's just like they're well into their adulthood with children who have jobs, who are struggling as well. So it's just like, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of those, I don't know. It's just like, it is the luck of the draw, honestly, because... How else are you supposed to get better if, you know, you see, hey, your mom struggled, so now you have to be that change. Right. You know, a lot of times we want to just be, you know, birthed into it, because we see a lot of people are, you know, they are privy to that. But
that's unrealistic, I feel. Like, it's not unrealistic, but because it happens, but I feel like for a lot of people, for most people, they're not born into wealth. But A lot of other people are able to hone in on wealth and then create it for their family. And I feel like a lot of people in our generation, millennials, that's what we're doing. Like, we want to, like, switch the narrative and change it and just be like, you know what? Okay, maybe my mom struggled, maybe my grandma struggled, and maybe her mom before that struggled. But we're in a different time, and we don't have to. Like, our kids... So I listened to this podcast, shout out to Righteous and Ratchet, but the guy was basically saying, like, his whole point of, like, his business, because he's a comedian, Kev on stage, he's a comedian, he does a lot of podcasts, and him and his wife do conferences, and he was, like, he just started a studio, he wants to, like, make movies and all that, but he was, like, basically all of the stuff that he's doing is so that his kids can either, they don't have, like, once they get older, they'll have choices of what they want to do. Like, they can either come into the family business, they can go to college, they can, you know, do what they want to do, but all of, like, the things that he has going on, all the businesses, will help him to generate money so that they can do that. So it's not like, oh, my kids have hit college, because I think this happens in a lot of homes, especially a lot of Black homes. It's like, doo-doo-doo, kids growing up, boom, boom, and then it's like all of a sudden, oh my God, my kids are about to go to college. I got to scramble and get money together and figure out, like, make sure they have scholarships. But it's like, you had this kid 18 years ago. You knew that 18 years was possibly going to fly by, and, like, it's going to be time for them to go out in the world, whatever they do, military or go to college or, you know, start working. But, you know, as people, right, you know what I'm saying, Megan? Mm-hmm. You know that time is coming. And it's like, a lot of times, it's almost like it's a surprise. So I thought it was interesting what he was saying by how it's like, you know, I'm already, his kids are like 10 and 12, I think. But he's like, I'm already preparing for when they become 18. And it's
But he's doing that because of what his situation was. Exactly. Like, what we're going to have to do.
Exactly. But that's what I'm saying. That's the type of mentality that we have to have, because our parents may not have necessarily had that type of mindset.
Clearly, but they did. They didn't have it that way. They had a mindset for survival. They didn't have a mindset for survival and comfort. It just had, I'm trying to make sure my kids eat. I'm trying to make sure there's a roof over my head. They didn't see the multitasking of it, like, or they didn't have the resources to multitask and keep going and to try to juggle four or five things. My mom had to take care of 3 children, worked 2 jobs, so she didn't have time to actually chase her dreams and do that. Millennials, we have time. We are the generation to, you know, take all the risk. Being a comedian, Kev on stage, I'm sure he had times where things weren't going well. Sure. But he had that freedom. He had that freedom to get it right before he have children, or to prepare for the children he has, or, you know, get them together, or, you know, have a savings and all of that. He's able to do that now because of the risk he took. Our parents didn't take risks because they were living in a survival mode. So I think it's our duty to take control, take those for risks, sure, so that we can, you know, take care of our family. Even though we wanted it the other way, maybe this is how it's meant to be. I have a friend right now making more than her parents. You know, I have a few friends making more than their parents. That is crazy.
That's crazy.
That is a goal.
You say that, but that's what our parents ultimately wanted.
Exactly.
Plant parents are always saying, you know, I did this, I struggled so that you could have better. And that's essentially the mindset that our parents have. And that's still the mindset that I feel like we have. But we're kind of like, I feel like we're the generation who's like, you know what? I ain't gonna struggle to get it. I'm gonna get it so that you don't have to struggle, but I also don't want to struggle while getting it, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like, and my mom says this a lot of times too to me, like, she says that you don't know struggle, or you don't want to be uncomfortable. That's exactly what she told me. She was like, you know, sometimes to get what you want, you don't have to be uncomfortable. And she's like, I feel like a lot of times you don't want to be uncomfortable. You just want, like, to go from, like, step one. So you want to go from, like, A to, like, Z, all in, like, a matter of just a little while, and you don't want to be uncomfortable to do that. But she's like, you know, there's levels to it, and you have to, there's going to be some type of, like, uncomfortableness, you know, when you're going from that process. And me personally, I don't feel like, I feel that way. I know that, you know, there's a struggle, because I'm going through the struggle. I've been through the struggle, whatever. Been through it, going through it. I've done the college struggle. I'm doing the adult struggle, all that. But I kind of get where my mom's coming from, because, I mean, and I don't know how you feel about this, Megan.
I definitely get where she's coming from. Like, I see it. Like, there's no way to see the tunnel or to understand or to enjoy the fruits of your labor if you don't learn, go through the wire. Mm-hmm. Some people say you can go through stuff and it's smooth sailing. That's a lie. Like, mm-hmm. I think there's always a struggle in some way to get to your dreams. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter which way it is, maybe financial, maybe understanding struggle, maybe a job struggle to get wherever you want. But a struggle is going to ensue so that you're able to understand the process and treat it like, you know, it could be gone tomorrow. You know, you have an appreciation for what you're going through. So I do believe there's going to be plenty of times being uncomfortable, you know, trying to get where you're comfortable.
Is there anything that you wanted to touch on the topic anything else, rather?
Well, I think we've definitely scratched the surface. That topic, black trauma, can go very deep to, you know, you being abused by your stepfather, being abused by your older cousin who was watching you. You know, it's so many levels to black trauma that all I'm saying is it is okay to communicate and speak with somebody you're comfortable with to get things off your chest, to write it down. That's a thing we need to do because there's a lot of people not being able to handle their mental. Mm-hmm. And mental is the only thing that keeps us sane when everything is falling apart. And so some people don't have outlets to go to. So you have to try to find an outlet so that you can survive. It's a survival of the fittest, Darwin's theory. He said it, and he meant it. And as I get older, I see what he's saying. And so many avenues is how you handle it is how you're going to survive. Like, shit could be so fucked up, but okay, either it's going to stay fucked up or you're going to be moving towards different avenues to fix it. It's one or the other, you know? So in this race I'm running, I am going with the flow, and I'm growing with the flow.
Oh, I like that. So, going with the flow and growing with the flow. Yes. That's a dope mantra.
Two snaps.
We poets over here.
All right. So, any more details on black trauma?
No, I think we touched on a lot of stuff. Also, I don't know, we were having like a heated debate the other day, or not even a debate, well, it was kind of a debate, when we were talking about, and this is sort of on topic, but kind of not, no, I mean it is, because it's funny. Okay, this is what we were talking about. We were basically talking about how in schools, one of our friends brought up like how in schools, they're about to like up the ante on sex education, and they're about to add in things about the LGBT, let me make sure I'm saying it right, LGBTQ community, and they want to emphasize on the trans community, and basically it's going to be taught in school, because you know already in schools sex education is taught, and this actually does tie back into the black trauma, but sex education is obviously already taught in schools, but they want to hone in on certain topics, rather, and dealing with the trans community, dealing with the gay community, lesbian community, because it's becoming so prevalent. As we've seen in like the media, we see Dwayne Wade's son and Gabrielle Union's stepson. He came out as being gay, and I think he's like 11, if I'm not mistaken. But we're seeing it at a younger and younger age. We're also seeing a rampant amount of kids committing suicide because, you know, people are picking on them because they were gay, and these are some young kids. So, and we can take that back to family trauma, and that's definitely not just the black trauma. But like I said, we can only speak from the black experience or whatever, but that can take me back to trauma, because we, in the debate that we were having with our friends, we were basically saying, like, some of us are like, it's too young in school ages, as far as elementary school, because I know in elementary school, when I was in elementary school, we started sex education in fifth grade, and some people would say, have said then, that's too young for sex education. And, you know, they would be bringing that plus, you know, the information about being trans or being gay or being a lesbian or whatever into starting in your elementary schools. So that's definitely a conversation I know for a fact we never had in my home, but it's also a different time. Like, When I was 5, 6, 7, you know, was a completely different time than kids who are 5, 6, 7 now. And working with kids, I see that at a young age, they already know more about sex at their age than I ever knew at that age. And even that I know now. So I'm just saying, and basically that's because the conversations weren't had in in homes. Like, and I do think that conversations should start at home, but being how conversations aren't very open in a lot of households, especially Black households, I don't think that that, for our new generation, I don't think that's going to happen. So I think it's, I personally think that it is a great thing that they would start bringing stuff, bringing like that type of conversation into schools and into a class and into a setting where it's constructive, because it could be very destructive in a household conversation if it's not had the right way. And from the situations that we've talked about, like trauma and how our generation reacts to things versus an older generation, that could be detrimental to the child. What do you think about it, Megan? We'll make this our last thing.
What was the question? Like, that what could be detrimental to the child?
There's no question. Like, I'm just basically saying, to piggyback off of, you know, what we were talking about in a previous conversation or whatever, basically saying how, okay, they're trying to bring, they already have sex education in school, but they're trying to add more to, they're adding, basically adding more to the curriculum, mm-hmm. as it relates to the LGBTQ mm-hmm. community. So how do you feel about that? Like,
well, I don't trust it. These are the same people who took the slavery and the details of how our Black people came to America and what we've dealt with. They whitewashed that. So how do we expect them to teach the real truth about what's going on with, you know, your sexual identity? It's just like we put so much faith in the school system when the conversation needs to just be had at home. Whether we know everybody's not going to do it, every parent isn't going to do it, but at least that could be the start, is at home. Even like every year, just that's something that needs to be addressed. Yes, we can, you know, put it in schools, but I don't trust it. These same schools, literally the history books are taking out the most important part of history. The kids don't know anything. We have to teach them about Black history. They have to watch Netflix documentaries to know about our Black history. But we're going to trust them to teach kids such a sensitive topic and so the kids can understand and, you know, make just calls when it comes to, you know, their sexuality or how they feel. I'm indifferent with it. It's a no for me.
So you are completely no.
Well, I'm indifferent.
You're indifferent. Okay. I feel that if done right, and I mean, because you never know how things, like you said, you never know like how and when they'll talk about it. But I feel like with this situation, because it's already like there's an outlet for them, for kids to already see so much, which is Al Gore's internet. And they are all up and through Al Gore's internet. So they already have like outlets to see a lot more, especially a lot more than we saw when we were that age. I feel like it couldn't hurt. Like this subject being brought into schools, I don't feel like it could hurt. I feel like it could only help, because there's already a world out here. And like going back to, you know, parents and people talking to their kids, it's like there's such a mindset, and there's such a way that people can, a way that our parents, I'm not even say people, a way that our parents can say and do things, that can, they can mean it out of love, but it can hurt, harm us. And I think I've seen that, you know, just going back to when I was talking about how I felt unsupported earlier, it's like they meant it in a way that was good for me, but I didn't receive it that way. So, excuse me. I feel like conversations that are, you know, especially about this sensitive of a topic, and when you're dealing with a child who is living in that situation, because it's different, you know, if, you know, your child is, you know, not gay or not, you know, trans or not lesbian or don't identify on any of those scales, you know, and the conversation might go a little different. And even, you know, we're not just talking about that. We're also talking about having a conversation with your kids about sex, period. Because whether, you know, whatever, you know, sexual orientation they identify with, they're still going to want to have sex eventually. And so that's also something that I don't know if your parents talked to you about it. Mine did. Once they talked about it once it, they saw it coming up. My mom talked about it once they saw it coming up. But I feel like with this generation, it's time to start things a lot earlier. Now, whether or not it needs to be in a classroom setting, it's up in the air. But I don't think, I personally don't think it could hurt. But, you know, that's just that on that.
That's that on that. That's
just that on that. We got a little extra time. Do you want to do a one gotta go, Meg?
Or this or that?
Or we could do another this or that, because Megan had one up her sleeve. But
I have one up my sleeve. We had talked about a very serious topic today, so I'm just gonna lighten the mood with a this or that. So, would you rather swallow the nut or spit the nut out? Whitney, I'm gonna answer real quick, and I'm gonna shoot it over to you.
Okay, you gonna answer first. Okay.
So I am not particularly a swallower, but I have found it does just keep it nice and sweet. You know, swallow it, get it out the way, and it's over, you know? So, yes, I don't like a lot of mess. So I'll take one for the team.
God don't bless nobody.
Especially, and if I am sucking you up anyway, that means I trust it. So why not?
Ooh, whoa.
That's right.
Trust.
Can't put your mouth everywhere. Can't.
I'm going to go with I spit, because that's what I do. Like, I swallow, but I'm just, I'm a spitter. And that's just that on that. I don't even have a reason why. Just, that's just what happens every time. But, you know, to each his own. And that has been another installment of What's Really Good.
What's Really Good. Do, 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 do.
Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you.
Y'all have been showing us a lot of love. Please, we're on all everywhere you listen to podcasts, you can listen to us. So like us, please share, rate us, give us feedback, comment. Shout out to Caleb for giving us a comment on Apple Podcasts.
A nice review.
Nice review. I loved it. So yeah, just keep subscribing. Keep rating us. Please give us feedbacks. Give us topics. We'll appreciate it all. Y'all follow us all at our social medias. I ain't even gonna give y'all mine. Just follow us. You'll find us. But mostly follow the podcast.
All right, that's a wrap.